Blog Talk Radio. This is Meditative Living with Swami Sivananda Giri, bringing you the teachings, the blessings, and the Shakti of His Holiness Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj Swami of Los Angeles, California, who in 2007 became the first white-skinned, American-born human invited into the rank of the Mahamandaleshwars, whose dharma it is to guide and protect and disseminate Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma equates to English best in this Swami's view as the eternal, natural way. That's all it means. Sanatana, like Sanatana. Okay. Sanatana Dharma. The eternal, natural way. By which any human, if they take up the practices under the guidance of one who knows, you'll do fine. And anyone can do it. And you don't have to become a Hindu in order to do these things. You can add whatever bits and pieces feel right to you. That's fine. That's the way I think most people who end up deeply involved in this particular way, very often come to it from a highly fractured field of awareness. So trying out bits and pieces, great. You know, so many, because this path can be so very ascetic, so very almost unbelievably and not easily understood why people would conduct themselves in the way that you see some strains of Sanatana Dharma and yogic exercises in them. These things all have value to the ones doing them, but there isn't a one way of doing any of it. All of it is available. The age of information is upon us, and you can learn so much more in 20 minutes on the internet than you could in 20 years, not that many decades ago. So this Swami is very happy to be of assistance to others who would wish to explore this particular path. All the paths go to the top of the mountain eventually. And when you get to the top of the mountain, you turn and look and you see there was never a mountain there at all. Your mind thought there was, and boy, were you seriously bought into that. But that that is seen through. Now, that doesn't mean for one who has seen through this and maintains that perception at all times, big, big difference. A lot of people getting glimpses, great, but you're not done yet. When you're done, it doesn't go away. And you enter into what is referred to as sahaj samadhi, which is effortless or natural. And it's just a new normal, you know? Nothing to put on the wall. Nothing to shine every week or do a ritual with, you know? Those things are seen through as well. So, anyway, we're going to go back into the Swami is very, very pleased to be a current representative of a guru within the tradition of Bhagwan Nityananda of Ganesh Puri, India. Today we're going to take up from verse 61. Let me remind anyone unfamiliar that this book, the Chittakasha Gita of Bhagwan Nityananda of Ganesh Puri, was not written by him. This was Nityananda spoke very little, actually. He was just quiet most of the time. And a group of his disciples started jotting down things that he would just say. I mean, he would just, you know, like be laying on his, he had a bed, a bunk kind of thing, wooden table sort of thing that he would lay on top of. And people would come to see him and ask questions and ask for blessings and healings and all this stuff. And, he would often just sit up and start to spouting this enormously deep concepts and things, like anybody's prepared to get hit with this, you know what I mean? So it would have a really interesting effect on those who heard these statements coming from him. But these statements were noted down by followers, and one, primarily a woman named Tulsi Amar, was the one who was credited with putting together all the verses, which are just separate statements made by Nityananda. But she was the one credited with the Chittakasha Gita. There have been all kinds of versions of it out and available. But today, we take off from verse 61. Nityananda said, "He who meditates on the reality is a sannyasi. He is a yogi. The distinction of pariah exists in the external. Internally, all is one without distinction. What is pariah is not after death. A pariah is truly he who has envy and pride, who holds vain discussion about religion, who talks ill of others behind their backs. Sewing is not stitching thread and cloth, but stitching manas and buddhi. Manas means mind, consciously, outwardly focused thought processing mind. And buddhi is the intellect. So, Nityananda spoke, merging manas in buddhi, now the distinction of male and female. A true female is one who is merged in the external. A true male is one who is merged in the internal. One whose buddhi is firm is male. One whose buddhi is fickle is female. The distinction of male and female, though, is external only. Internally, such a distinction does not exist at all. When the manas and buddhi, the mind and the intellect, are merged in the Atman, for English, Christian-based belief systems, when we use the word Atman, you can think soul, okay? And we'll be pretty much on the same sheet of paper. When the manas and buddhi, the mind and the intellect, are merged in the Atman, okay, is that the soul at the pure individuation level of consciousness, aware of its individual nature, and also directly aware that there is more beyond that. Okay. Acharya Kedar's commentary on this. A sannyasi is a swami. There are also monks who become ascetics and in various traditions and that, and they leave society completely, and they go to the mountains, they go to the forests, But that's not something that's necessary, and there's a lot of those guys and gals that are of that type, that have nothing to do with Swami orders and stuff. Swami orders, the 10 orders of the Swamihood, or the sannyasi orders. Have little to do with those very independent yogis who are out, in the woods and the mountains and that sort of thing. But the sannyasi is technically a term that means renunciant. But a swami is also a sannyasi. Take a sannyasi vow. Anyway, Acharya Kedar's commentary. A sannyasi is not defined by orange robes and lectures about God. To be a sannyasi, you have to be a yogi. A yogi is one who meditates on the reality, on God. Many believe that certain people are of an inferior caste or class, or have inferior genes. This is a political distinction that has nothing to do with the truth. Those who are egoistic are the inferior ones. They are the ones who suffer. To remove this and all other negative conditions, one must merge manas, the mind, in the supreme consciousness, the buddhi of God. This is what should be sown and not crops of worldliness. When the manas and the buddhi are merged in the Atman, one who is physically a woman becomes spiritually a man. Now, don't take this as the man versus woman common disruptive problem, because it's not speaking of that. By man, it is only quickly and easily also sayable individual, okay, with neither biology supreme, okay? Each one functional, doing exactly what needs to be done. Yes, yes, that's how it works. But at the level of the Atman, the sexual identity is not. At that level, you perceive you are but a fragment of the whole. Verse 62. Nityananda said, the body is the cave. In this cave dwells the Atman. Atman, dwelling in the body, must attain moksha, which means liberation, which also means the end of the rounds of birth and death. The outward bodily parts are various. In the invisible, or subtle, all is one, indivisible. Om is pranava. Pranava pervades the form, or the body. Om is bodilessness and formlessness. Acharya Kedar's commentary. The physical body is a mere shell. Inside this shell is the indweller, the witness, known as Atman or the big S, self. Shiva becomes the Jiva. Jiva is the individuated unit analogous to soul. Okay? Shiva becomes the Jiva in order to realize Shiva. Stepping away from the text for a moment. If you can think of it in this way, you'll be spot on. The one came the many, so the many could enjoy the realization of the one again. That's how it is. Back to Acharya Kedar's commentary. God becomes the individual bound soul and then goes looking for God until he realizes himself by attaining liberation. The body has many manifestations, but the self has only one indivisible quality. This quality is made up of light and sound and is embodied in the mantra. Om is known as the pranava mantra. Om is the very nature of Shiva. It is formless and without any body. I think that's plenty deep enough, and I'm going to leave you to roll around and get some of that on you for a while. Verse 63, Nityananda said, bhakti, in the beginning, is selfish. afterwards, there is no selfishness in it. When a man attains perfection, the whole universe becomes to him his guru. That's what Nityananda said. Acharya Kedar's commentary. Love or devotion, also in our system we refer to this as bhakti. Okay, but that's the feeling of love or devotion. In the beginning, this love and devotion, bhakti, is selfish. Before we have the experience of God within on a consistent basis, we give love with selfish aims and are engaged in the process of, quote, buying and selling, where we barter words, affections, and sensations for individual needs. Through the guidance of the Master and in keeping the company of a Siddha, our love and devotion becomes pure, and we come to understand that bhakti is truly the love for God and compassion for others. We come to understand that it is unconditional. When a person attains this knowledge, he or she becomes perfect and the entire universe becomes his teacher. Now, I'll let this Swami step away from the text for a moment and clear something up. Others might be thinking in error. In this portion, where it says the individual takes the entire universe as his teacher, this is not indicating that the student is in need of any intellectual teaching at all at this point. Because through the body, through the interacting of the disciple or the student with the master or teacher, guru, whatever term you care, but through that, a subtle, energetic transfer that broadens, deepens, and makes more sensitive the consciousness of the student. And it's the way I very much love this analogy. The master, the guru, the teacher, okay, again, don't get caught up on the terms. One who can do this gets a name. You know, that's just how it works. But anyway, that one sits there with a candle lit. In your hand is an unlit candle. If you wish to have a lit candle, you may approach the one with a lit candle. And from their candle, they can light yours, begin your process, and never lose anything themselves. They just gave you what was natural in them, which had been given to them by their guru. And so on and so on, back and back and back and back and back. Okay? That's how this stuff moves forward in time. Verse 64. What is called Hatha Yoga is selfishness. In Hatha Yoga, a man seeks his own goodness. He seeks fame. He can stop the sunrise of tomorrow. He can create a mountain of gold. To say, I am Brahma, is not just. Thou, O God, art all. All art thou. This we must say. A yogi is one who thinks the whole universe to be a yogi. He should regard all as himself. Acharya Kedar, commentary. Yoga is not a spa. In Hatha Yoga, now this is the ones who just do physical stuff. The postures and the stretches and that. Okay, that is used in a certain stage of development, but the West has gone completely nuts and turned a very preparatory thing into a big business, and I don't know. Anyway, back to Acharya Kedar's commentary. Yoga is not a spa. In Hatha yoga, one studies techniques for strengthening the body for a good meditation posture. That's the whole purpose of the asanas portion, so you can sit still. This is very useful. Some branches of Hatha yoga also teach certain siddhis or psychic / supernatural powers that can be used in conjunction with certain postures and mantras. Some use these powers to create wealth and fame for themselves. Other branches of Hatha yoga place the entire focus on physical health and well-being and sexual vitality, missing the point of spiritual transformation altogether. The problem with these approaches is that they feed the ego of the aspirant and cultivate the senses rather than helping the aspirant to rise above the ego and the senses. To say, I am greater, I am better than others because I have this strong body and these great powers is unjust and deluded. A yogi should follow a path that will bring him or her to the realization and experience that she is not the body or the senses or sense pleasures, and that God alone exists. The yogi's practice should be one that leads to the realization that this world does not exist, but is really a play of divine consciousness that unfolds on their own inner screen. Only true yoga. Verse 65. Let's see, before we do verse 65, let's do the bottom of the hour song. And Sonic, if you have something to add, subtract, multiply, or divide, follow it out with the jingle. And if the jingle don't run, I'll go right back to the text. Namaste!
Namah Shivaya.
Particular phrase there means I give honor to the one who showed me truth. In our tradition, we say that. Okay, verse 65. Nityananda said, if a man goes to a forest and there lives in a cave, it is just like a beast in a cave. Even the milestones are better than such a man, because by the milestones we can count the distance in miles. Such people are of no use whatsoever. A thoughtful man should gradually go on renouncing the world. When a man eats food, it is for his own benefit. Others are not benefited by it. It is not enough if we leave darkness. We must always live in the light. If we have a light on a dark path, we have no fear. There is fear in walking in darkness. Acharya Kedar's commentary. There are many who believe and teach that the world must be renounced in order to realize God. These people give away all their belongings, dress in a worn-out sack, and flee to forests and caves. What they don't realize is they take all their karmas, all their limiting notions, all their negative attitudes, all their useless beliefs and psychological problems, and all their cravings and desires with them. These limitations cannot be removed by a change of clothes or location, nor by a change in outer behavior. Such a person is just like a beast in a cave, who is a victim of the fickleness and fluctuations of nature, having no control over itself. A person who makes gradual, recognizable progress on the spiritual path that is sustainable is much better than a mendicant. When you drive a road that has mile markers, at least you know you are making progress, because with the mile markers, you are able to measure the distance you are traveling, to know how far you have traveled and when you have arrived at your destination. Following the instructions of a siddha, remember, a siddha is a perfected being. These perfected beings exist in numerous traditions around the world. Okay? So please don't take that, because I use this Sanskrit word siddha, that I'm speaking only of people involved in what is perceived as Hinduism or anything like that, okay? There are knowers. if we can use that term. Masters. Some people get offended just by the word master, and I keep forgetting that, actually, when presenting the show. I don't think about that because in my own development, quite a bit of time as a martial artist. So from the perspective of a martial artist, a master is the one who's got all the knowledge, technique, and understanding in how to use it and what comes from it and, you know, all those things. This is what we seek out, a master who will share with us this understanding, this knowledge, this degree of capability in this direction. Well, it's very much the same for yogis. Because the master is not a relationship like, see, so many here in the West, they'll hear the word master, and then all of a sudden their mind spits out, slave. You know, when that has no application here at all. None. The guru, the master, the teacher, the knower, their task, sometimes they don't even want the task, to be quite honest with you. Their task is to assist others to reach the same state of understanding and consciousness they enjoy. And that is their only purpose. Breathing is to do that. Other things will occur, of course. But that is the responsibility that goes to one who is given the assignment of performing the function of guru in a physical body, because there's a great deal that goes along with that. Anyway. Back to Acharya Kedar's commentary. Following the instruction of a siddha is just like this. Like following a path with mile markers on it. You are able to make lasting progress that is measurable. Bad habits, useless attachments, and poor thinking can be given up gradually as one becomes stronger in sadhana. Sadhana is the practice that's given to you by the master. Don't try to change the world. What you practice and do is like the food you eat. That food only benefits you, not other people. So, if you want to see change in the world, become the change you wish to see in the world by changing yourself and transforming your own vision. Changing your environment, because it is negative, is not enough. You create the world you live in, merge your identity and consciousness in God. Then, even if you live in the most difficult circumstances, you will have no fear and no worries. Fear is a state of mind created by the notion of separation from God and the notion that you are imperfect and separate from all others. When you change by the inner experiencing of the self, with a big S, your outer circumstances and environment will naturally change without struggle. The Swami will testify that is the absolute truth. Verse 66. If you perform tapas, which is austerities, okay, those crazy yogi things where a guy walks around with his hand above his head for 30 years. Now his arm's stuck like that and he can't do anything with it. Well, okay. That's part of his, that's what is considered tapas, austerities, to purify or to remove particular karmas and things. Okay, that's what those are done for. Again, back to Nityananda's verse 66. If you perform tapas for thousands of years with the desire for results, it is of no avail. But if you perform tapas for one ghatika, which is a period of 24 minutes, without any desire for fruits, you will see all in God and God in all. Acharya Kedar's commentary. Tapas is intense penance. And in yoga, penance is ardent and vigilant spiritual practice and worship done regularly. Once a man asked Gurudev, "When will I attain siddhahood and what practice can I do to acquire it quickly?" To which Gurudev replied, "There is no such thing as siddhahood. Intent is everything. Motive is everything." Gurudev used to say, "Spirituality is not a field to grow crops in. On the spiritual path, the best intention is the simple longing for God. If you do your practices with a burning love and devotion for God and the master who is assisting you, this is enough to secure the goal. In fact, after understanding that the goal of yoga is liberation or God realization, it is best to forget about liberation and simply focus on the joy of daily practice. God responds to pure love, not the tainted qualities of desire that are the trademarks of the ego. Armed with this type of love, God comes looking for you, and you see all in God and God in all." Verse 67, Nityananda said, "Hatha yoga is duality. The most excellent is Raja yoga. No man should think he is the doer. Everything is ordained by the great self," with a big S. "Salt is obtained from seawater. When it is mixed with water, it becomes one with it. Similarly, Maya springs from Paramatman," which is that which is beyond Atman, if you can recall when we were using that term a while back. "Maya springs from Paramatman and finally merges in him." Acharya Kedar's commentary. Due to its focus on the body, Hatha Yoga can promote the notion that you are the doer and that you own your body and possess its attributes. This becomes an obstacle on the path to liberation. Excellent is Raja Yoga, which Raja means royal. Yoga, of course, recall, simply means union. So this type of yoga, Raja Yoga, this is the path of the king. Not the king with the crown on his head. The king who rules over his own systems and penetrates into the subtle realms. Back to Acharya Kedar's commentary. "The most excellent is Raja Yoga, which is the Siddha path that involves Shaktipat and spiritual practices focused on merging one's individual identity in God." on the Siddha path, the focus is on realizing that you are not the body or the senses, and that God alone acts through you. Through the meditation taught and intense contemplation taught as the primary focus of such a path, one comes to acknowledge that the body is on loan from God, and that it is the Shiva Shakti principle, or God principle, that ordains and does everything. Just as salt comes from the sea and dissolves in sea water, this illusion of Maya that we refer to as world is a manifestation of the absolute and finally merges back into the absolute. Verse 68, Nityananda said, Vedanta means the end of the Vedas, the supreme knowledge. The Vedas were lessons on all sorts of different things, all kinds of knowledge. Okay, Vedanta means the end of the Vedas, or the sum total of the Vedas. Vedanta means prana, or breath. To be entirely merged in prana is Vedanta. Vedanta is one, indivisible. It is unbreakable. What is called Veda recitation is not from the tongue. Veda recitation should be from the throat. Those who know this secret are Brahmins. Brahmin would be a knower of Brahma. Veda is the one letter Om. It is the fire of inspiration. Vedanta is formless and changeless, indivisible. Light is caused by Veda. What is called dharana in yoga is the real recitation of Veda. Acharya Kedar's commentary. True Vedanta is not the recitation of the Vedas, but the firm realization and awareness of that, with a capital T, which the Vedas point to. Practice of Vedanta is attained through the awareness of the space between the breaths. It is the awareness of ajapa, japa. Ajapa, quick Sanskrit understanding. When A is placed before something, it means without that. Okay? So ajapa, japa means recitation, means repeating the mantra over and over and over and over and over and over and over. Okay? Ajapa, japa is when you are getting the effect from doing the mantra without the thought process to repeat it. Okay? The Hamsa mantra that sounds on its own with each inhalation and exhalation. This is what you come to in the silence, in the stillness. To merge with that consciousness, experienced between soul and hum, is true Vedanta and nothing else. Dharana is the act of remembering God at all times. That is true yoga and the meaning of the real recitation of the Vedas. Do one more. Verse 69. Nityananda said, just as a tire of a bicycle is filled with air by a pump, the nadis, these are the subtle nerves, or the energy plumbing within the subtle body that is also feelable within the physical body. Just as a tire of a bicycle is filled by an air pump, the nadis should be filled with Vedanta discrimination. Prana should be raised to Brahmarandra, the highest point in the brain. The nerves should be purified, and such purification should be done step by step. Buddhi and Manas should become one with Paramatman. You should play with him. You should sit in the upper story and look around downwards. Buddhi's place is above. Buddhi must become one with jnana. Jnana means knowledge. You should always drink the water of eternal joy. You must be one with the nectar of Ananda. You must know those who are always merged in this eternal joy. You should know the very secret of this Ananda. Truly, the Kundalini must be awakened. Just as we rock a child in a cradle, we should fix our attention on the head and examine what takes place there. Paramananda, which means supreme bliss, Sadananda, which means eternal bliss, are there in the head. Shivalinga is also in the head, which should be one. Acharyakita's commentary. A bicycle needs firm tires to move, and those tires are filled with air. In the same way, the true understanding of Vedanta is experienced when the yogi directs prana, the breath. This isn't a physical breath. This is an energetic situation, not the physical breath. Vedanta is experienced when the yogi directs prana into the sushumna, that's the central channel for energy that runs directly from the base chakra up into the head. This is like a tube, a subtle tube that energy moves up and down through. And the breath, the prana, the actual energy, can also be made to move up and down in that channel. Prana, the breath, into the sushumna and raises the breath to the crown chakra at the top of the head. Then the outlook of the sages that is expressed in the Vedas can be experienced for oneself. Pranayama purifies all the nerves of the body step by step. In order to experience the absolute, the individual intellect, buddhi, and the manas, or mind, along with the lower ego, must be merged in Shiva consciousness through meditation. You should play with the Lord in this way by identifying with him. Have the outlook of Shiva by experiencing this world from the upper story, the highest point of existence. Stepping away from the text for a moment. This is what this Swami has often utilized the analogy. Come and sit in the owner's skybox and watch the game. See, those of us in Western culture who have been exposed to professional sports can comprehend this. You know, if you got let into the owner's skybox, all the cool stuff's in there. They just bring you stuff. What a great place to watch the game from. This is what we're talking about, okay? This achieving a higher viewpoint. Back to Acharya Kedar's commentary. have the outlook of Shiva by experiencing this world from the upper story, the highest point of existence. Buddhi's place is being absorbed in Shiva Shakti, in the divine will. In this way, Buddhi becomes the storehouse of true knowledge. Drinking the nectar of self-awareness in this way is eternal joy. Become one with this nectar, with this eternal bliss. Keep the company of those who have attained liberation. The secret to the constant rapture of this bliss is Shaktipat, the awakening of Kundalini Shakti that is imparted by a Siddha. This is the secret to attending uninterrupted Ananda. After receiving Shaktipat from a Siddha, practice, practice, practice. Just as we rock a child steadily and gently in its cradle so that it can experience peace, we must meditate on the crown chakra in the head and examine what takes place there, which is the phenomena of bindu and nadi. Nadi is the sound, bindu is the light. The bliss of the self, the bliss of Shiva consciousness, is experienced in the head, in that spiritual center. Shiva dwells there in his fullness, where Buddhi becomes one with Spanda Shakti. Spanda Shakti would be the energetic movement for the creation of frequency. Okay. Sonny, still there?
Yes, I'm here. Namaste.
Namaste. Kindly remind me what we were going to do at this point. Fractionalizing.
Yeah.
Not really enough time to get into it. Perhaps next week we'll discuss that, or I'm sure if folks tune in to the Type 1 radio news bong on Saturdays, we will discuss it in full.
Which is at 3 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. GMT, tomorrow.
Right. Please come and hang out and call in if you want or whatever. Namaste and blessings. See you next week. Or whenever you download or access.